Welcome to radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to firehouse.com.
Fire up your public education program with Bullex Fire Extinguisher Training Systems. Utilizing Bullex live fire training systems, you can easily teach your community to fight Class A, B, and C fires without the mess of traditional training. Bullex training extinguishers discharge only air and water, while the flame control system creates a realistic response, extinguishing the fire only when the trainee is using the appropriate technique for a realistic training experience. Visit us online at www.bullexsafety.com or call us at 888-4-BULLEX.
And joining us on Fire Marshal's Corner as we get ready for Fire Prevention Week, we have a series of experts from across the nation to talk about what they're doing in their communities or their states of fire prevention. And we're going to start with Judy Comaletti, who's the Manager of Public Education for NFPA, to talk about what this year's theme is. So, Judy, fill us in.
Hi, Ed. We're really excited about Fire Prevention Week, which happens October 5th through 11th this year. And the theme this year is it's Fire Prevention Week, Prevent Home Fires. Of course, fire departments throughout North America will be celebrating Fire Prevention Week throughout the month of October, and that's really wonderful. What I want to talk to everyone about today is all the information that NFPA offers on our website, firepreventionweek.org. It's the place to go for all the information you need. I hope everyone is checking our blog every day because you're going to find new information and new ideas to help with your Fire Prevention Week campaign. We've also have some great lesson plans for fire safety educators to use in the community, whether it's fire safety educators or teachers. These are fun, hands-on lesson plans that really bring the message home to the community. Fire Prevention Week is a community-based activity, and it's our role to try to provide information to make this campaign a success for the local fire departments. So we hope that a lot of the information is useful, whether it's the media information with press releases and fact sheets, everything that you might need for Fire Prevention Week. New this year, you're going to find our Dan Dufus Fire Prevention Week PSAs, and these can be found on the website, and they're three fun PSAs talking about different safety hazards in the home, where we talk about cooking and heating, and we've even included information on residential sprinklers. So these are great PSAs that you can use on the local cable access, or if you have a business that has a closed circuit television, you can use it there too. So we're really encouraging people to utilize that information. For people who haven't received Scholastic in their communities yet, we have all of the Scholastic materials available to be downloaded in both English and Spanish. And these materials are available for grades kindergarten through 5, and it's lots of fun activities for schools to do during Fire Prevention Week or throughout the month. So if you just go on the website, you're going to find lots of things to do as we celebrate Fire Prevention Week.
Okay, well, thanks, Judy. That gives a great overview of the theme for this year, and some great resources are available through NFPA over the Internet. So I hope everybody's going to take really good advantage of that. And what's the website again, Judy?
That's a good point, Ed. You need to go to firepreventionweek.org.
Okay, great. Right. Well, now we're going to move out west and find out what's going on out in Utah. Joining us is Monica Colby, who's a public education specialist with the Utah State Fire Marshal's Office. And what's happening out in Utah now, Monica, for Fire Prevention Week or Fire Prevention Month?
Yeah, for us, it's a month. It's about 2.5 weeks of quite intensive activity across the state. We have a lot of good programs going on, from smoke alarm testing, calling 911, stop, drop, and roll, even CERT teams teaching how to use a pressure bandage.
What's a CERT team for those that might not know?
The Community Emergency Response Teams. We have quite a lot in Utah, and most all of them are run by the fire department.
Oh, okay.
There's three things that I'd really like to point out that's going on in Utah. One is our office at the State Fire Marshal's office. We have 8 of the fire and life safety trailers that we loan out to fire departments. And during Fire Prevention Week, there isn't a day that a fire department isn't using one, and we generally move them every day to a new fire department. And on those trailers, that people walking through can physically change and fix any hazards and practice escaping if there was a fire in their home. Another great idea that I found that's going on here is a couple of our departments are doing home fire drill plans, having the people sit down during their open house and draw their plan before they leave and go back home. So maybe they'll actually practice when they get there. It's the 25th anniversary of one of the puppet shows in our local department, and there, the preschool children come. They have about 750 children coming this month, and they practice stop, drop, and roll, and they get a chance to touch a firefighter in gear. And the last one, which I thought was a really interesting and creative idea, is called the Race for Life. They invite the high school students to race against each other. Whoever has the most participation gets a traveling trophy. So whichever school gets the most kids to attend gets the trophy for that year. And in order to get their points, they have to, each student comes, they test an alarm, they crawl low under smoke, they check a door to see if it's hot, they go out the window, and they stop, drop, and roll. And it's all based on the percentage of attendance they have to the number of students in that school.
Yeah, that's a pretty creative and innovative program.
Yeah, they don't even have to advertise besides telling the student body that they're going to do this. The school takes care of all of the rest. They have over 2,000 people come to their open house each year.
Oh, that's excellent. That's an excellent idea. Well, we're going to move back east again now. Wanda Willis is a lieutenant and a fire prevention education specialist with the Harrisonburg Fire Department down in Virginia. What's going on in Harrisonburg this year for Fire Prevention Week, Wanda?
Well, we're getting ready to kick off Fire Prevention Week with some college events. We'll be going to James Madison University for 3 different events. One, we'll be going to a dorm and actually putting in smoke and letting the kids exit out of the dorm room. They actually came to us and asked if they could do that, so we're excited about that. We also will be going on Friday night to kick off Parents Weekend at James Madison. We'll do an event where we'll take our fire safety house and let them come out of the smoke-filled rooms, but we also will do our live burn at that time, and it's at an off-campus housing complex that we think is going to be a huge event. We've heard nothing but professors even today called to set up to see if they could make a video of this so that they can share it with their geometry students. So I think they're going to use it for a lot of different ways to promote safety. We also on Saturday will be setting up before the football game at James Madison and talking to parents as they come into the stadium. And we have a mulch display that we set up and show how cigarettes in the mulch can start a lot of the fires. And then on Sunday night, we go into the Valley Mall when it closes and set up a display that will be set up from 9 o'clock Monday morning until 9 o'clock Saturday night, where we man that for the entire time that the mall is open. And we bring in first graders that will come in on a field trip from all of the city schools, and we give them each about an hour tour of this display, and it has burned furniture in it from actual fires here in Harrisonburg. We also have candle safety, burn camp photos. We have a little bed this year that we will bring in where a child had started a fire in his house and burned his house, and we've got the actual bed where the fire started. We've got a love seat where a man lost his life because he was smoking and set the love seat on fire. Those are the kinds of things that we feel that folks can really see that it does happen to people in our own community. And we also give free blood pressure and free blood sugar to anybody who wants to come through and receive that. The other thing that we do is have our third graders in our city schools that we go in and teach our Risk Watch program. And so in the third grade, they have to do their fire drills and they have to plan out their fire escape, and they will bring their plans into us at the mall with their parents. And when they come in, they get a free T-shirt. And so we get a lot of the kids at night that will come in and tour our displays also. So we have a lot going on, a lot more. more, and I won't tell you everything because we have so many things. We do take our fire safety house out to the Children's Museum and let them go through that on a Sunday afternoon. And so we're trying to catch all the different ages, and sometimes that's pretty tricky in a one-week time, so we kind of spread it out a little bit.
Now, you'd mentioned you're doing a demonstration burn. Can you talk about that a little bit, exactly what that is?
We are doing a burn at JMU on Friday night, where we will actually have one room that will be sprinklered and one that is non-sprinklered. And we're going to set it up. We have advertised this pretty heavily, so we're going to have live radio there. We're going to have food and drinks and things like that for the students and their parents, because we're hoping the parents will attend, being it's Parents' Weekend. And we will actually burn the two rooms and show how fast the sprinkler can put out the fire. We took this from UED, and it's really gone big time with it, because most of the folks are really wanting to see it. And when we've gone out and talked to the James Madison students, they are so excited because they really do not grasp the idea of how fast a fire can burn.
And that's what we've found when these burns have gone on, is people, you know, before they say it, you ask them, you know, how long do you think you have to get out of a room? And they're like, oh, 10 minutes, you know, 15 minutes. And they realize it's actually measured on the scale of seconds and not minutes before they can get out. And that's what they walk away with, is that kind of impression. So I'm sure it's going to be very successful, as it always has been, you know. And if people are looking for information on that, we'll put a link on the homepage where you can get some plans to download on how to build these things. They're very simple, aren't they, Wanda, to build?
Right, very simple. And we received a grant from Lowe's and the American Trauma Society, who gave us some funds. And it wasn't a lot that we needed. More of it is more for the brochures and handouts than for the actual things that you need to put those two rooms together.
Yeah, they are pretty simple, and I guess the best criteria is, heck, if I can build it, anybody can build it. So. All right, well, that's some great information. Oh, and I want to do a shameless plug here, Wanda, if I can.
Okay.
There are some great videos online here at firehouse.com of a program that James Madison University did about a month or two ago now, where myself and Justin Phillips from the People's Burn Foundation did a day-long seminar that Wanda put together. And they videotaped it and put the videos, and firehouse.com is hosting the videos on the website. So we'll have a link down below to those as well for people that may want to see those. If you want to get 6 hours of Ed Camo and Justin Phillips, here you go.
It's actually one of the best that I've seen on there, because of so much information that we can give to everybody who listens to it. It's not just the students and not just educators. It's anybody who listens can learn a lot from those online on Firehouse. Can I also do one really quick plug in? I
sure,
want to say that one of the things during Fire Prevention Week that we really need to think about is getting our chiefs and our upper echelon of the fire department on board with us. I know our chief is so good about prevention, and we work with prevention more than we do other things, because he knows if we can stop that fire, you know, it's going to save a life, or it's going to save somebody's property. And every time that we have any kind of fire in the city of Harrisonburg, we go out and do some kind of education. We do not have a lot of fires. We are very blessed with that. But when we have one, we talk about it, and we let people know what happened so that they can prevent it in their own home. And I do believe that a good fire chief with good prevention goes a long way in the community to being able to get those messages out.
And you're really talking about the teachable moment. You know, hopefully it's not the ultimate teachable moment where somebody died, but it's great that you're taking advantage of the fires while the visibility is there, while people are paying attention.
Right.
In the immediate aftermath. And that's a great strategy. And if you've got the support of upper management, well, that much better. Yeah. Well, now we're going to move a little bit up the coast to Jennifer Meath, who's the manager of public education from the Massachusetts State Fire Marshal's office. And what's going on here in my state of Massachusetts for October, Jennifer?
Well, one of the things the fire service in Massachusetts and the Northeast is very concerned about is that the high cost of energy this winter will lead to an increase in home heating fires and fire deaths, as people make difficult choices sometimes between food, medicine, and keeping warm. As people may turn to alternative heating or perhaps hold back on maintenance of their heating systems. So we're asking all the educators in Massachusetts to really incorporate those safety messages. Our flagship public fire education program, the Student Awareness of Fire Education Program, puts trained firefighters in classrooms to partner with teachers year-round. Obviously, the school-based programs really get their kickoff, their launch during October and Fire Prevention Month, but they're quietly working classroom by classroom across the state to deliver messages that fit into the school's curriculum throughout the year. And we do a lot of the things that have already been discussed, such as booby-trapping a room so that students can identify home hazards, which is, of course, can be reinforced with a homework assignment, encouraging families not only to make a home escape plan, but then to actually practice it. And so when you get the adults to sign off on homework, you get that link, that connect between home and school. And obviously, we use the fire safety houses as a really non-scary, fun way to get kids to practice home escape plans. For the high school age students, this year we've launched a burn awareness video contest. It's designed to get students to research fire and burn issues, to harness that peer-to-peer teaching, and using the media that they love, counteract the very bad or incomplete messages about fire that they're getting from places like YouTube. It's been carefully designed to fit into the media literacy part of the school standards, and we'll be announcing the winners during Burn Awareness Week. So,
And when is Burn Awareness Week? When's
it is in February. It's always the first full week of February.
Okay.
And we're doing an interesting mall thing out your way in Springfield on Saturday, and we've partnered with students from a college fire science program to really teach them about reaching out to the community, and we'll also be partnering with the Shriners and the Masons at that event. So that'll be an interesting partnership from a variety of different agencies behind fire and life safety.
Well, I'm definitely going to have to swing by to see that and see what that's about. I mean, it's, and what I really like what I'm hearing, too, is that many of you are doing the kind of a more comprehensive approach where it's, you know, reaching a larger demographic, you know, the high school students, the college students, to really expand the messages and make sure that they stay in there, which I think is just a great approach to keep reinforcing what they're learning when they're young as they get older and make sure that the message does mature with the audience, that, you know, they get more responsibility in terms of their own fire safety.
I'm so impressed with the everything that I just heard. I mean, it just sounds like such wonderful activities, not only during Fire Prevention Week, but throughout the month of October. I noticed that a lot of people are doing home escape planning, and a fun thing to add to that is to make it part of the Great American Fire Drill, so that anyone who does plan and practice a home escape plan can go to sparky.org and register their plan and watch the numbers grow as far as the number of people who actually plan and practice their escape.
Oh, that's great.
One of our fire departments has picked the community they feel is at most risk, and they're doing a block party, sort of like Night Out Against Crime, and they will come when they bring their engine there and honk the horn, everyone's coming out, and then they're going to do education once they've got everyone out of their home.
Oh, well, that's a great idea.
Yep. And for those that have a Domino's Pizza in the area, Domino's is doing a delivering fire safety messages. So franchises that team up with their local fire departments will be delivering, when pizza is ordered, they'll be delivering the pizza on the fire truck, in many of the communities, as well as giving them fire safety information and going into the homes and testing smoke alarms. So if you have a local Domino's in your area, you may want to contact them to get involved.
That's another great tip. There's just so much going on. It really is incredible. And I think next year when we do this, I'm just going to really have to put together a pretty comprehensive website, because I'm going to link out to all of you and list some of these ideas on our website here. But, you know, there's just so much going on, and they're just so good and creative, some of the stuff we've heard here today, that I have to imagine there's just so much more out there that we just haven't heard about.
Right. I think the web has opened up so much for everyone. You know, when you think years back, we've just increased all of our activities and getting the word out to each other. So it's really a nice community event across the country.
Well, we've had a great session here. We've been talking with Judy Camaletti, who's the Manager of Public Education for NFPA, Monica Colby, who's a Public Education Specialist with the Utah State Fire Marshal's Office, Wanda Willis, Lieutenant, who's a Fire Prevention Education Specialist with the Harrisonburg Fire Department, and Jennifer Meath, with the Manager of Public Education for the Massachusetts State Fire Marshals. So we kind of span the country here, got a lot of great ideas, and I appreciate all of you taking the time to share those with us today.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Add a new dimension to your public education program with Bullex Emergency Response Training Environments. Smoke, heat, and digital flames create realistic, heart-pounding, yet completely safe training scenarios for your trainees. Bullex Training Environments are full-scale, mobile, interactive training centers that test an individual's ability to respond in an emergency. These training environments combine smoke, heat, and digital flames with interactive smart props, such as pull stations, fire alarms, and heated doors, to create the most comprehensive, realistic fire training experience possible. Visit us online at www.bullexsafety.com or call us at 888-4-BULLEX.
And joining us now on Fire Marshal's Corner are three people that were pretty closely involved with the recent vote at the International Code Council meeting. This was really a key event in that what happened for the first time after many years of trying is the code was changed to now include the requirements for sprinkler systems in one- and two-family residence halls, and I believe townhouses as well. And it took a lot of effort on a lot of people's part to get this forward, and we're going to be really talking about that. But first, I think I'd like to go with Mike Love, who's the fire marshal for the Montgomery County Fire Department. And, Mike, maybe you can give us an idea what kind of impact this is going to have on the local level. What's going to happen in your jurisdiction?
Well, actually, our jurisdiction is not going to be affected by this because we've had a sprinkler ordinance since 2004. But I can tell you from that experience, there are significant things that are going to change for the fire marshal's office. Not so much the fact that these are any different, these systems of NFPA 13D, but the workload, depending on your robust housing market, could increase. And so you have to be ready for that from an implementation standpoint. Let me mention a couple things, though, that I think are preliminary to getting the start. And the good thing is we have some time here. We implemented our law in October of 2003, and it was set for January 1st. So we had only a precious few months to savor our victory and then implement this pretty big process. First thing I would recommend, though, is that everybody make sure that their relationships are in good order. First of all, you've got to work closely with the building official. It's got to be a hand-in-hand deal. If not, the building official may be the lead on this, which is fine as well, depending on how you do your community's fire and life safety inspections. Second of all is probably the most critical, because these are going to be the people who have the most concerns, and that is the builders. The Builder Association should be contacted and have a peace branch or whatever you want to call it, and try to establish a regular problem-solving meeting with the builders so that you can just get rid of anything that might be a barrier or a restriction to this. Leave no stone unturned when it comes to quality or customer service in this area, because I think that it resolves so many issues that you're going to have. Again, the building officials should be brought in early for an idea of what's going to be expected of them. Give them an opportunity to react and see what's going to be required so that they understand the process, because they're going to have to bring in a new contractor into their whole stream of things, and that is going to be a stressor for them as well as a time issue. So they need to be on board early on. Third group that you need to have involved is the water authority, which is often separate from all the other areas involved in building. We haven't solved this area completely yet, but the water authority has obviously our agent, and sometimes their restrictions through their pipe size, through their meters, through their backflow preventers. Try to resolve this early. We had a very big problem in Montgomery County, and after 4 years, we finally have resolved with our water authority, and they've agreed to increase the size of their tap. So that is huge. I can go on and on and on. So, Ed, I'm not sure exactly where you want to stop me here, but there's many steps that they have to do in planning for this process.
Now, you'd mentioned that you just had a few months to get ready. Now, this change that just happened in the ICC code, it's going to take some time to filter down to the local level, isn't it?
Correct. Yeah, and I think that that's the beauty of it, is that our industry, fire and life safety industry, has an opportunity to do some strategic planning on this, and then some action planning on how they take the steps to get this implemented in their area.
It's really going to depend on what version of the ICC code a state or a local jurisdiction is using right now and what time the changes are made. So we're kind of talking on the scale of years, aren't we, before they can possibly hit at the local level?
Yes, at least, as I understand it, 2011, and then, you know, some jurisdictions lag sometimes 3-6 years before they will implement a new code. So it could be as much as 10 or more in some areas.
Mm-hmm. But you have to start somewhere and get it going. So that's the great news about what happened out there in Minneapolis, is getting it rolling. Yeah. Well, the meeting out at Minneapolis was a pretty large one. It's not the first time that sprinklers have been on the agenda, but it's the first time it did successfully pass. And it really happened because of a lot of groups and organizations came together to really make this happen. And one of the critical groups that was involved with this was the International Association of Firefighters. And joining us to talk about that is Sean DeGrain, who's with the IFF and is also a battalion chief with the Cleveland Fire Department. Sean, you know, what kind of efforts did you guys go through to get the IFF behind this and help make this happen out there so successfully?
Well, it wasn't a great effort that was put into getting the IFF behind it. The IFF has always had a long history of supporting the requirement of sprinklers in all buildings, and also supporting the fact that sprinklers do save lives, not just civilian lives, but also firefighter lives, and help prevent firefighter injuries. My local, Cleveland 93, submitted a resolution at this year's biannual convention. And on August 15th in Las Vegas, Nevada, the membership representing 290,000 professional firefighters voted overwhelmingly to support the requirement of residential sprinklers and its passage at the ICC hearings this fall. So after that, it was just a matter, because there was some questions as to where the IFF membership would stand on this. There are some inaccuracies out there that people believe that the fire service doesn't support sprinklers because they think there are some in the fire service that think they're going to lose jobs with fire sprinklers, and that's just not the case. I don't believe so. Suppression is 7% of our job. We provide so much more to the community than just fire suppression, that the real value of the fire service is out there. And, you know, if that's a question, we need to market it better. But, you know, our first sworn responsibility is to protect life and property, and we use all means possible in that. And supporting active protection, it goes along with that sworn duty.
And it was a pretty good turnout out there in Minneapolis, wasn't it, of people coming together to just really show the support on this from...
It was a great turnout, and I know we're here on sprinklers, but I think a lot of members get their first taste of what the code hearing's about and started to see some of the potential that actually being involved in this arena can impact other areas. We had a number of other issues that came up for vote, whether it was the protection of lightweight construction or the requirement of carbon monoxide detectors, that our members started to see that this was happening, and they actually could have a voice in it, and they could actually impact that vote, and they could actually impact the safety both for the citizens and themselves in so many ways just by participating in this venue. Hopefully it really resonated with them, and we'll see them come back for more.
Well, I know it was an eye-opener for them. I've been hearing a lot of reaction to it. And just exactly what you said, they realize that they can have a voice and an impact in this. And when you have almost 300,000 firefighters that belong to IFF that can be a part of this, that's a pretty potent force to have in there involved, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And when they get properly educated on an issue and they can see the impact that it has, like I said, it's just not about firefighter safety. It's about civilian safety. It's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
When motivated, they can see the results of their input. They are a strong force to reckon with.
another strong voice out there, too, is an organization called Common Voices, which is led by Vicki Pritchett, who's also on the board of directors of the Pleasant View Fire Department. Vicki, can you give us a little bit of overview on Common Voices, you know, who you are, and also what role you played in the hearings out there at the ICC hearing?
Yes, I would be glad to, Ed. Common Voices is an advocates coalition that is determined to help create a fire-safe America. And the coalition was formed in February of 2007 and is sponsored by the National Fire Sprinkler Association. And the NFSA wanted, in a sense, to give back to those who had been directly affected by fire. So they brought together six individuals who were identified as being directly affected by fire in that they had suffered a tragedy. But they didn't stop there. They turned that tragedy into an advocacy, either by lobbying at the state or local level within their area for fire sprinklers. And many times we who are in the public education field realize that we do live in America with this feeling that that will never happen to me. And then when it does, you are forced into the reality of what comes next. And for many people, when they're faced with that challenge, that's when they really dig deep and they find the way to do something positive with that tragedy. And they work very hard and they're so dedicated to keep someone else from going through what they did. Because what they find is that it's so simple. And I think that each of these individuals has had that realization of something so simple as the installation of a fire sprinkler would have made a difference. My son, my daughter, my husband would still be with me today had fire sprinklers been present in the building. And many as well are burn survivors. You know, so many times I believe the burn survivors are the forgotten statistic. We monitor our fire death statistics and keep up with those on a yearly basis. But sometimes we forget to factor in those who survive and live with lifelong injuries that stay with them. So when you look at it as a big picture, we do indeed have a fire problem in America. But thank goodness there is a way for us to work together in a common goal, if you will, to work toward. And that is exactly what Common Voices has provided for these advocates. As I said, we have six. Vina Drennan, who lost her husband, Captain John Drennan of FDNY in 1994, is one of our advocates. Amy Acton represents the burn survivors. Amy serves as the executive director of the Phoenix Society and is also a burn survivor herself. And then we have Gail Menger, Bonnie Woodruff, Donna Henson, Justina Page, all having lost children in fire. And there is nothing more real than to have had that loss. And we had two advocates speak during the testimony in Minneapolis, and I believe for anyone who was in the room that they will certainly say that you could have heard a pin drop, that they put a face to the problem in a way that made those who were there about to cast their votes realize the significance of that vote, if you will. And Amy led off the pro-sprinkler team, if you will, with wonderful testimony coming from her on behalf of those who are burn survivors. And then Karen Mann, who lost her daughter, Lauren, in the Ocean Isle Beach fire, absolutely, about midway through, that's when you could have heard a pin drop. And Karen gave the audience the ability to feel. And I think that it is because we care that we've worked so hard. And Karen provided the analogy that she could have been, fire sprinklers could have been installed in the home in which her daughter died for less than the cost of the funeral flowers, the flowers at Lauren's funeral. And that was something very tangible, and it was something that we could all relate to, and I think that it really did make that problem real to us. And so as a result of that, You now find that our next challenge, and we have certainly said among the Common Voices advocates that this is only the beginning. You know, many people are celebrating and it's like it's over, but it's really only beginning, because our job now is to educate and to have communities and public policy makers, building officials, fire officials understand how to adopt the 2009 edition and when that will be available and the timing of that. And we do know that there is some time built in and that the sprinkler requirement will become effective in 2011, which gives time for everyone to get ready. And I think that that has worked out extremely well, even for on the home builder side, because we are right now in a downturn with the economy, and it gives that industry time to recover from that and be ready. And I think that education is just key. And we're very excited about having the advocates available to help local communities and states with bringing the face to the problem, if you will.
And I think Vicki brought up a very important point, too, is that it's not done yet. And there's still the possibility that things can change before it actually is implemented at the local level, isn't it, Mike? Don't the local jurisdiction have the ability to overturn it or to amend it?
Well, they do. But I think an interesting thing that occurred prior to the hearing was the state of Minnesota kind of put the building officials in the state of Minnesota on notice and said, if you really object to this, you've got to get it done at the code hearing, because they are not going to amend out this amendment or this code change once it's put into the code. So I think that a lot of jurisdictions, states, really feel strongly that the process of code development works and that everybody has their opportunity and voice, and that once it gets to that local level, then they amend to make what works in their community. But for the most part, they accept the code because it's pretty widespread. That's not to say that there won't be jurisdictions out there that will take that risk. And I think personally, it is a risk of them doing that, to take technology that is known and proven to be effective nearly 100%, and to amend it out when it could save lives. If you don't mind, can I mention something that's really interesting about this whole process, Ed?
Sure, go right ahead.
And Vicki, her part of this, as she spoke so eloquently about the Common Voices, and Sean's part of this with this huge organization of labor. It was pulled together by a coalition, and it's so fascinating about coalitions in the fact that we've had two very successful coalitions, the Fire Sprinkler Coalition and the Say Cigarettes Coalition, become successful in the last couple of years after many, many years of trying to, you know, get those two technologies into common use. And I think it just goes to show you that when people pull together with a common purpose, common voice, common union of things, they can get things done that are good.
Oh, I think unquestionably, and you're hitting the nail right on the head. That was actually kind of going to be my next question there, Mike. You were getting ahead of me.
Oh, sorry.
No, but that's great. You really hit the nail on the head, how everybody came together. The IRC, led by Jeff Shapiro, you know, bringing everybody together to really do this, the Home Fire Sprinkler Coalition. And I think with the Internet, it's just really giving us even that much more leverage out at events like this. And Sean is kind of talking about it, too, that there are other issues. And Sean, what are some of the other issues we maybe can look forward to in the future? You'd mentioned lightweight, which didn't make it through this time.
Yeah, we fell 50 votes shy of a two-thirds majority. I tell you, Ed, I don't know if there's a worse feeling than standing at the front of the room and watching your votes walk out the door before you can get up and testify.
Yeah.
But that comes with educating the fire service about the impact we can have at this level, and how it, not to use the word trickle down, because I don't want to be associated with any kind of economic package, mm-hmm. but you know, we can really impact our work environment. Our work environment as firefighters is not the station house. Station house is simply our staging area. The work environment is the built environment that's out there, and it's built to the corresponding codes. And in the fire service, instead of being reactive and responding to the types of construction that are coming down at us, we need to be more proactive and help determine what those construction features are going to be, mm-hmm. whether it's protecting lightweight construction. This cycle, I thought we did very well as a fire service for occupant safety and also firefighter safety. We had a number of issues dealing with schools, school lockdowns. The sprinkler threshold for schools used to be 20,000 square feet. This year we put it to 12,000 square feet. Mm-hmm. You know, we're requiring the sprinkling of furniture stores that sell upholstered furniture. So there are a lot of issues. We hardened stairways and shaftways for elevators, mm-hmm. for means of egress, and also for staging areas for firefighters. I could go down with the whole list, and I think I've emailed that list to Mike, but mm-hmm. that's a show upon itself. But I think it's important for our members to realize that not only did we get the sprinklers passed, which now puts the burden on the home builders and those who are opponents of sprinklers to justify why they're going to remove a nationally recognized safety feature from a minimum code, mm-hmm. whereas prior to that, the burden was upon us to prove why it should be in the code. Yeah. Well, we did that at the national level. Now the burden's upon them to remove the safety feature. Yeah. And I think that's the important aspect of it.
Well, you know, we can't enjoy the great success that you guys all pulled together out there in Minneapolis, but as we've been talking about, there's still a lot more to be done. But I think it was a good case study, a good example of how everybody came together on a common mission here, and we were able to move this forward very successfully. So hats off to all you guys and everybody else that was involved in making this happen out there. You all put together a tremendous effort, and, you know, firefighter safety and public safety is just going to see the end results. That's all there is to it. It's just going to be a safer world because of what you guys did out there. So, like I said, my hats off to all you guys. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ed.
Thank you, Ed.
Well, we've been here on Fire Marshal's Corner. We've been talking to Mike Love, who's Fire Marshal with the Montgomery County Fire Department, Vicki Pritchett, who's a facilitator for Common Voices and also on the Board of Directors of the Pleasant View Fire Department down in Tennessee, and Sean DeCrane, who's a battalion chief with the Cleveland Fire Department and also with the International Association of Firefighters. And we've been talking about the recent success for the change of the code, the ICC code for residential sprinklers. So thanks for joining us, guys, on Fire Marshal's Corner, and we'll be talking to you later.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Joining us today on Fire Marshal's Corner on radio at firehouse.com is Bill Kehoe with IFE USA and Jim Crawford, who's representing Vision 2020. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Good morning.
All right. Bill, maybe you can start with you and just can you give us a little bit of overview on the Institute of Fire Engineers here in
okay.
the United States, because a lot of people just may not have heard of that organization, but it really is certainly a vital one to this project.
Yes, it is. The Institution of Fire Engineers is actually a British-based fire service organization based in the UK, and it is a large organization, 11,000 members worldwide in 23 different countries in 45 branches or chapters. There's a chapter in the United States, and we're a new one, basically. We're 10 years old now. The rest of them are older than that. The organization actually is celebrating its 90th anniversary this year. Then what I mean by fire engineering organization, it's actually a fire service organization as we know it here in the States, in that fire engineering means fire service outside of the United States borders. So in other words, anyone from a firefighter to a chief officer to a fire investigator to a fire educator are eligible for membership, and membership is based on academic qualifications, professional qualifications, and fire service qualifications. So it's not just a dues-paying organization as a sole criteria. And the purpose of the organization is basically, like those in the United States, to promote fire and life safety.
Well, IFE was a pretty vital part of this grant, too, because you were essentially the entity through which the grant for Vision 2020 was applied for, and took quite a bit of the lead on this grant and making it happen, which obviously we really appreciate here. And Vision 2020 was something that has been in the works for a while, and Jim Crawford from the Vancouver Fire Department has been a real key factor in just
pushing this forward over the years. I know it's been a slow go, and then when IFE jumped in and applied for the DHS grant, which we were awarded, things just took off. So, Jim, maybe give us a little bit of the history on how the grant came to be and where you're standing right now with the project.
Sure, Ed. I appreciate the opportunity. And if you don't mind, I'd like to say, as a proud member of IFE, and as you know, Bill pointed out, it's not just to pay your dues and you become a member. There's some criteria involved, but it's a great organization, and I'm really grateful that they stepped up to the plate and said, yeah, we're willing to gamble and see how this all pays off, because from my perspective, I have a tendency personally to kind of undersell things for Vision 2020, which has been a collaborative effort, a team effort from the very beginning. So I'm serving more or less in the role of facilitator to try and keep things moving forward, but we wouldn't be there without IFE stepping up to the plate. And I like to downplay things just so that we don't overpromise and underdeliver. But there has been a significant amount of progress from the beginning, and even since our meeting in D.C. What basically began as a group discussion on E-Parade. Many of your listeners may be familiar with what Mike Love started for fire marshals and related professionals to discuss issues online. Basically evolved to a meeting in conjunction with an NFPA meeting in Orlando, Florida a couple of years ago, where folks basically realized that we needed some kind of a plan nationally if we were going to move forward. Things appeared to be moving, but disjointed. And there was a lot of opportunity for energy to go in what I would describe as unproductive directions. So people really passionate about prevention, reinventing the wheel, you know, even competing with existing resources and so forth. So the grant was basically to do a national strategic planning process where we could identify some significant gaps in the existing service areas and say what needed to move forward. Out of a web forum, which you helped arrange and Firehouse helped arrange, Ed, where more than 500 people, I think it was more than 500 at the end count, nationally participated in an online discussion, and 13 satellite locations around the country where they kind of hammered out some details, given the information about where we were with the U.S. fire problem and where we expected to go. What kinds of things needed to be done to keep the ball moving forward, us recognizing that significant progress, including what's happened in the UK recently, that significant progress can be made. We can do better in the United States is the bottom line, but where to put our efforts has been the question, our collective efforts. So out of that web forum and then a physical forum in D.C. where 170 people gathered, fire service-related safety organizations, some real leaders in the national fire safety arena got together and came out with five strategies, five areas where we wanted to see some significant emphasis. That first one was on advocacy for prevention in general. That is more externally focused for decision makers to raise the level of awareness and hopefully the level of importance that fire prevention deserves. By describing the fire problem in more economic terms. 3,500 deaths a year is horrible, of course, but doesn't capture national attention as much as explaining that the economic impact of fire in the U.S. accounts, as our friend Ozzie Murkoff says, for you know about 2.5% of our gross domestic product. And it doesn't take a rocket science to figure out in this poor economy that we can ill afford to have those kinds of losses. So advocacy was number one. The second strategy was a national public education slash social marketing campaign. We're still hammering out the details on exactly what that's going to look like, but coming up with an overarching theme for prevention that others can fit into, and then I suspect some specific emphasis on smoke alarms will be the final product. The third one is raising the level of importance of prevention within the fire service. There are organizational cultural aspects to that whole piece, but basically trying to get the fire service to embrace the idea of prevention anew, and I'll come back to all of these. The fourth one is technology, increasing efforts in technology. to improve fire and life safety, the fifth strategy is about codes and standards, and obviously there are already codes and standards efforts in place. So it's mainly about collaborating on our priorities. And probably the best example of that is what the International Residential Fire Sprinkler Coalition and others have done with regard to the residential sprinkler issue. If you put all five of those together, there is nothing new that we are saying that hasn't been said at one time or another in our history, beginning from plans that we looked at from 1913 to the president's 1947 planning process. It's a matter of what should we put effort into now, and those are the five that rose to the top. So we have received some continuation funding from Department of Homeland Security. We are actively soliciting other funds to continue the effort, and we've identified champions, if you will, facilitators, conveners for each of the five strategies, or I'm hopeful, Ed. I guess I should qualify that first one. We're still waiting to hear back on that part of it, but I'm hopeful that we're going to have leadership stepped up to the plate on each of the five and start developing more concrete action proposals involving the volunteers who were actually there in Washington, D.C., and developing specific action plans with budgets where we can solicit fundings to turn all of the plan into action. I hope that's making sense.
Sure, and since we have Bill Keough here, too, the IFE has stepped forward on the strategy to change the culture of the fire service, because a real problem we have is that when it comes to fire prevention, that's not one of the hot, sexy things that firefighters really jump on very much, is it? They want to be doing suppression or other things, and fire prevention just really doesn't, you know, isn't one of the hot ones. What are you looking at possibly doing in that whole arena there, Bill?
Well, as I said, the Institution of Fire Engineers is an international organization, and our branch has known for, since we got started, that fire prevention is not the hot topic, like you say, in the United States, but it is in the majority of countries overseas. Fire prevention is the number one program for fire brigades in many countries, and as a result, their fire deaths are much lower than ours, both civilian and firefighter, and that's why the U.S. branch jumped at this point to see whether or not we can do similar programs here in the States to lower our fire death rate.
And it's going to be a challenge to do that, isn't it? There's no two ways about that.
It most certainly is, because our fire service right now is still in the heroics of firefighting and jumping in and pushing forward with the fight, where in reality it should be the prevention issue to save lives and property, not be the hero.
Who are some of the other facilitators that have come forward, Jim, on some of the other strategies?
Well, Strategy 5, for example, the codes and standards, I'm really thrilled about this. Sean DeCrane with the IAFF, and he works for Cleveland Fire, has stepped up on that one. I think it is great that the firefighters are becoming much more active in the prevention arena. I think we have Sean to thank for that. I don't know how to describe it. I think it's just great that that the firefighters are taking a lead role in that, and others are expressing an interest in participating. And like I said, that whole residential sprinkler piece is a great example of the force that we can gather collectively when we work together.
As a matter of fact, another segment of today's show is just that. We have Sean DeCrane talking about how that we brought together a coalition of people, including the IFF.
You know, so. I think it's super, yeah. And I know that he's anxious to continue that work and expand it into some of the other priorities that we have, which really collaboration is what it's about. If we can get the various fire service organizations to say, this is what our priority is, let's organize around those things, that's Strategy 5. Strategy 4, Dan Madrikowski from NIST is taking that on. He's already started work on some of the specific action items. Strategy 3 at this point is actually kind of a loose-knit group of folks who are coalescing around that. I'm involved from the Institution of Fire Engineers.
Actually, I think Strategy 3 is what Bill is doing, right?
Oh, I'm sorry, Strategy 3, yes. I apologize, Bill. So that's Strategy 3. Strategy 2 There's actually a group of people forming around Strategy 2. Myself from the Institution of Fire Engineers, Mary Kay Oppie, and Angela McElide from the Home Safety Council, Dr. Mick Ballesteros from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, Paul Schwartzman, the chair of the public education section for NFPA, and there are others. Ed, you're one of them. Bill, you participated in those discussions, and I know that we've got more out there who are interested in really putting their shoulder to the wheel for a national campaign. And Ed, I would leave it up to you to talk about Strategy 1 and what you see the possibilities are for Champion Rising for that one.
Well, I think it's really important. Bill kind of hit the nail on the head there when he was talking about other countries. You know, they really have a coordinated approach to when it comes to fire prevention. Within the fire service, you know, there's a strong interest in it. And so we really need to build that advocacy and get people interested in it to move it forward. So we're approaching some national organizations, right? We're really close. Real close to getting somebody, but they haven't committed quite yet, so we really can't talk about who that's going to be, unfortunately.
Right.
So we'll have to, hopefully by the time the final report's out, we'll be able to lock that one down.
Yeah. And, well, I'm cautiously optimistic, and I think it's a good sign. Here's what I would say to people out who are listening and even who participated in the process. It's going to be slow and hopefully sure. It's not the kind of an organization where we have revenue to throw around and say we will follow up immediately. We collectively have to go out and look for the funds. That should be no surprise to prevention people who do the same thing on a day-to-day basis. I would just urge them to be patient, stay tuned, and there will be ways for people to get involved and add energy to the direction that we're headed.
So we're looking at the report coming out on October 6th, which is rather timely. It's during Fire Prevention Week. So what are going to be the next steps after that? Is this just going to be another report, or is there some further action that's going to be taking place?
Well, time will tell. That's really the bottom line, Ed. But the fact that the report mentions the five strategies, the next steps are all about what we've been discussing, and that's each one of the work groups assigned, or volunteering is a better word, for these five strategy areas are actually convening to refine the plans, create more specific actions, create budget requests, and then actively solicit funding to make it a reality. I'm cautiously optimistic about the possibilities of getting additional grant funds for each of the five strategy areas and continuing to move forward. And like I said from the beginning, it's not that I'm not passionate about the issue. I am, as much as anybody. But I hate to overstate and under-deliver. Time will tell. I can tell you for sure that our goal is action. That's what we want to see happen, and I'm cautiously optimistic that that's exactly what we'll get out of it.
Well, I think we will, because we're seeing a lot of buzz about this. A lot of people are, you know, we certainly had a lot of people involved in it, and a lot of people are looking for the final report to come out and what it's going to say. So I think there's a lot of buzz on the street, so to speak, when it comes to Vision 2020. And Jim, really have to commend you on your leadership on this whole project, too, and also your patience in making it happen over a course of years. I know you've been really working very aggressively at this.
And I appreciate that, Ed, but as I said before, it's a lot of people pushing, or it wouldn't be happening.
Yeah. All right, well, we've been talking about the Vision 2020 project, which is being run through the Institution of Fire Engineers, being funded by a grant from the Department of Homeland Security Fire Prevention and Safety Grant. And joining us was Bill Kehoe from IFE and Jim Crawford with Vision 2020, and also his real job, day job, is the Vancouver Fire Department. So thanks for joining us, guys, and taking the time to fill us in on this really important project.
Thanks for the opportunity, Ed.
Thank you for the opportunity. That's right. Thank you.
I'm Ed Camo, and you've been listening to Fire Marshal's Corner on radio at firehouse.com.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening. And stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.